Future-proof extra.
With Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
On News Talk.
Now, when we're feeling at our most misanthropic, we tend to fixate on how we are the ultimate invasive species, a relentless globalizer that spreads to everywhere in previously unseen numbers, laying waste to habitats and species and warring incessantly amongst ourselves along the way. But at least we're the best at something, right? Well, perhaps not. We may have met our match in the form of unicolonial ants. John Whitfield is a science journalist and author who's been writing about this for The Guardian. He joins me now. Welcome to the programme, John. What are unicolonial ants, please?
So most ant species, they live in nests and they will fight with ants from other nests, be that other nests of their own species or other species of ant. But there are some species, when you move them to a new environment, they stop fighting with each other and they create these huge colonies consisting of hundreds of thousands, sometimes even millions of nests, where the ants from one end of the colony to the other will accept each other as nest mates and cooperate with each other. And that gives them a huge competitive advantage over other species in the same place. And as you say, makes them very effective invaders.
So we're not talking about all species of ants, but can you give an example of where we're talking about and how many? You said hundreds of thousands of nests. I mean, that's a lot of ants.
That is, absolutely. So there are about 30 species that have evolved this trick, and there are about 14,000 known species of ants. So in terms of all the total ant species, it's a tiny handful. So there's one species that lives in the UK and Ireland is a species called the Faroe ant, which is originally from Africa. So it likes warm weather, but it has made itself a very effective pest in basically anywhere that has central heating. It's found a way to live in buildings, and that has made it a nuisance in this part of the world.
And so like compared to other ant species, what is the behavior that's different here? Like, how does the colony spread in such a way?
One thing that a lot of these species have is that in their homelands, they have more than one queen in a nest. So some ant species, there's only one queen per nest, but these species, they tend to have maybe up to, you know, a couple of dozen queens maybe in a single nest. And that seems to, if you think about it, you've already got multiple groups living inside the nest there that are able to get on with each other. And in fact, some of these species in their homeland, their colonies can consist of more than one nest where ants will travel between them and work together, but they're limited in their home environments. But when you take them to somewhere new, that seems to be able, they seem to spread and sort of colonies bud from one another, basically, a bit like a plant might. And they can just bud and keep budding and keep budding, and nothing stops them. So they can cover the ground, they can live at much higher population densities than other ants because they're not fighting with each other, and that gives them basically overwhelming force of numbers in their new environment. And as well as these kind of specific things, there are some things that invasive species of all stripes have. So they tend to be willing to eat anything, they're willing to live anywhere, and they tend to be aggressive, and they're just good competitors in general. And when you take them to places where they haven't been encountered before, they can be overwhelming.
So these ant species, they don't in any way co-opt other species, but they just grow and grow. Is that the idea?
Yes, that's right. They are able to outcompete the local ants and sort of monopolize territory and resources as they spread.
After a while, do these ants not become genetically so different from each other that they would war if they came in contact? So if you imagine sort of a loop, do these ants know who's in their colony? Because, you know, we've heard about super colonies before in this program, but this sounds like an entire nation. And you know, how a species recognizes which are its own and which may be potential threats. How does that work in ants?
Yeah, that's a good question. So ants recognize their friends from their enemies by smell, basically. When two ants meet, they run their antennae over each other and their feelers, and they kind of get a taste of each other. And if they recognize the smell of their own colony, they will work together. If not, they will fight or avoid each other or whatever. So what happens is these unicolonial species, the super colonies in new places, because they're descended from only maybe just a few nests in the homeland, they tend to be much less genetically diverse than you'll see in their homeland. And that in one sense, that can be an advantage because it allows you to spread and it allows you to keep recognizing each other. But it might be a disadvantage in that you're more vulnerable to diseases because you're more homogenous. Or it might be that at some point that recognition system breaks down and they do turn on each other. And these colonies can be prone to collapse, but we don't really understand why. So there are a few ideas about why that might be so, but we haven't seen it in process and worked out why it's happening.
With only a small number of queens, how does a colony get to be so large to be up to a million nests? How does that work? Because it wouldn't be possible in other ant species.
Well, it takes time. So typically the species they'll start producing new queens in the spring. And then as the population of an individual nest grows and starts to kind of become crowded, as it were, some of those queens will leave and they'll take a bunch of workers with them and start a new nest. And that might be only a few meters away. So over the course of any one year, they might extend their territory by only 10 meters.
Oh, right. Okay.
So maybe 10 up to about 100 meters, something like that. We help by moving ants to new places and help setting up new colonies from there. That's one of that basically is how they travel long distances, thanks to us. And then,
me not knowing much about ants. How do we do that? Because I would have thought only if you transport the queen can you actually transport a colony, and there aren't that many queens, and the queens tend to stay in the nest.
Well, they might travel in crops. In one of the major things that moves them around is people moving plants for trade, which is because they tend to travel with their soil,
right,
or fruit trees or ornamental plants. So it's not actually that hard to get a whole ant's nest, put it on a ship, take it to another part of the world.
Right.
And then once you plant your tree, your ants are there. And then once you do that enough, so we take care of the long distance dispersal and the ants fight the ground war, if you like. They slowly spread over centuries. This has been going on for hundreds of years, kind of. It's basically as soon as humans started crossing oceans with any frequency, we started taking the ants with us.
Yeah.
So they've had some time to establish themselves.
And presumably they need a considerable amount of resilience, these unicolonial ants. Are they stronger? Do they need less nutrition? Or you know, what qualities do they have to allow for this extraordinary expansion?
They tend to be unfussy, so they will scavenge dead animals, dead insects. They will raid our larders. They will eat plants. They also
ants do that, or no?
Well, some ants are more specialised in their diets than others. So they will also I don't know if you've ever come across the idea that ants farm aphids. So when aphids are eating plants, they excrete the sugary sap because they have more sugar than they need, and ants will eat this and protect the aphids, which is one of the things that can make these species agricultural pests. Their nests tend to be quite simple, quite easy to build and easy to rebuild if they get destroyed. So they've got this kind of guerrilla lifestyle that makes them makes them very robust in lots of different sorts of environments. That's one of the things that these species have in particular, whereas some ant species are much more fussy about where they'll live and what they'll eat.
And this robustness, the ability to thrive in any sort of environment, and the desire to sort of populate the world has led to their inclusion on the International Union for the Conservation of Nature's list of worst invasive alien species.
That's right. So the IUCN, which is kind of the main global conservation organization, it has a list of the 100 worst invasive species in the world. And there are five ants on it, and they are all, they all have this unicolonial trait. So like I said, there's only 30 species out of tens of thousands of ant species, but the ones that are the unicolonial ones definitely punch above their weight in nuisance value.
And do they fight with other ants? Are they territorial in that way?
Yes, ants are fiercely territorial creatures. And so they will, where colonies, where different colonies come into contact, you get zones of conflict or avoidance or competition. And these ants are no different in that regard. They will fight other species. And there are some places in the world where different super colonies of the same species come into contact, and there you can get extremely long lasting and in terms of the toll it takes in ant fatalities, extremely, extremely damaging conflicts.
The problem with this, of course, is that as they invade our homes and territories, they become quite the pest. How significant are they in terms of pests for human or agriculture? And how do you deal with something that is so unstoppable in a way?
Yeah, again, good question. So yes, very significant is the answer. At certain times and places, there have been essentially plagues of these species. I mentioned the Pharaoh ant earlier, and the reason that took its name from the people comparing its effect with the plagues of Egypt that were in the Old Testament that visited upon the Egyptians. And so you have got situations where they can essentially drive people out of their homes and off the land because they are just capable of invading in such numbers, they're invading people's larders, eating their food, anything sugary or meaty, they tend to go for that. And there have been, you read stories of plagues where people have had to put the legs of their beds in dishes of oil to keep the ants, stop the ants crawling up the legs of the bed to get to them. In terms of how we can fight back, that's not an easy one because once they're well, we tend not to notice them until they're a problem. And by the time they're a problem, there's so many of them that it's hard to do much about it. There have been various campaigns with, so in the years after the Second World War, there was efforts to control them with pesticides related to DDT. Obviously, that has costs of its own, and yeah, most of those chemicals are banned, not allowed for that use anymore. There are more targeted efforts, more selective pesticides, which can be useful in defending crops, for example, or in places like the Galapagos and Hawaii, where these ants pose a threat to rare native species. You can defend sort of nature reserve areas with that. But in terms of eradicating or kind of reclaiming large amounts of territory, it's not clear how you might do that. So kind of once they're here, they're here.
And are they moving around, or are they slowly? Sounds like a science fiction film, doesn't it? Are they moving around, or are they slowly taking over the entire planet?
Well, they are. There are some things that limit them. They tend to be from warm countries, so they're limited by.
But the planet is getting warmer, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. So that might make some places unsuitable for them, but it will probably mean they can spread north as they so. So a lot of these species that aren't here at the moment might be coming our way. As I said, so ants have been around for tens of millions of years. This came along relatively recently. It's only a few species. So, and as you said, this lifestyle might have its disadvantages. So it might be that this is a kind of weird evolutionary blip that disappears in some time. We don't know. So it's hard to say how it's going to play out, but certainly for the foreseeable future, it's they are becoming, I guess, more significant, more widespread.
DDT is obviously a sort of a nuclear approach. Given that we know how ants communicate with each other with these hormones, is it possible that we might be able to get a more specified approach to them by tapping into how they communicate and perhaps rewiring that or disabling that ability to stop them from spreading?
Yeah, people have thought about that. So if you can if you can put something on the ants that persuades them that they're not part of the same colony, if you can trick them into fighting with each other, that would obviously vastly weaken them, and they might do a lot of the job of controlling themselves for you. And that's something people are thinking about. Nothing has come to market yet, but I know people are working on that.
And finally, in terms of Ireland and England and the threat to us, not to be very self-centered about it, but you did mention that they were here. Are they a significant problem for us in the future, do you think?
So most of the unicolonial species, it's too cold here for them at the moment. That might change as climate change progresses. The Faroe ant, I actually don't know when it arrived. I guess it's probably been on the case of decades, and it has established itself as a kind of a nuisance, but not an absolute plague. So it's not going anywhere, but it's
right now it's not so much of an issue. Yeah,
it's not going to drive people out of their homes, I think. No.
If you'd like to have a look at some of these ants that we talked about, you can find photographs on our Twitter. We're at NewsTalkScience. But for the moment, science journalist and author John Whitfield, thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on NewsTalk.